From the four corners of Southern California, this is The Hot Seat, and you're in it with me, Max Schwartz. It starts right now. Today, on the phone, as yet another special guest, I have 54th District Assemblyman Sebastian Ridley-Thomas. How are you, Assemblyman Ridley-Thomas? Thank you very much for taking the time to call into The Hot Seat this morning.
I'm quite well. Thank you for allowing for this opportunity.
My pleasure, and like I said, we are very happy to have you. We've got a lot to cover, so I do not want to say any more. So without further ado, let's get started. I first want to talk about you being a freshman legislator. Is being a member of the Assembly what you thought it would be?
Yes, certainly. I worked in Sacramento for 4.5 years in the Senate entirely, but it's just across the hallway, so I'm very pleased with what we've seen so far, and it's really a much better time to serve than in previous, the last probably 10 to 15 years. The people of California have restored their faith in governance by allowing for a majority vote budget and by passing Prop 30, the first tax increase of its size in about 30 or 40 years, basically since Prop 13. The people have been very weary of state taxes. So by allowing for additional revenues and majority votes on budgets, they've put the majority party in position to exercise responsible fiscal management.
Does that also have to do with the fact we are not dealing with an energy crisis and the Democrats have a supermajority in both houses?
Well, the majority vote really addresses a simple majority, so the supermajority doesn't apply as much. But the crises with energy don't necessarily affect the underlying budget issues. It affects the economy, it affects ratepayers, but not as large a part of the state budget. We do have a resource challenge with respect to the drought, a severe shortage of water intake and whether it be snowpack from the Sierras in Northern California or rainfall throughout the state. But again, that's not a direct immediate hit on the state budget. It will have a significant impact on resources and local water agencies and the water delivery network across the state. But it's really the people entrusting us with the majority vote and then the additional revenues to temporarily help close the structural budget deficit, which you may recall was exacerbated with in the Schwarzenegger years, when Schwarzenegger pushed for a reducing the vehicle license fee. The other part of the water piece that I should mention is that its impact on the single largest sector of our private sector jobs, the agriculture industry, is rather profound, and that's where you'll see a hit on the budget. Is if ag isn't as productive, we'll lose the fees and taxable income and sales tax related to the agriculture and goods movement industry, and that will have an impact on the budget.
And we will. We did have an issue earlier in the season due to the harsh cold that we had, which added additional pressure to the crops. But the hot seat is attempting to get Assemblywoman Eggman on the program, who is the chairwoman of the Agriculture Committee in the Assembly, to discuss everything going on with the drought and then some. But speaking of the drought, what are you telling your constituents to do, first of all? And second of all, what are you doing as a legislator to try to get us through it?
Well, the constituents that I serve are largely under DWP, which is taking a number of measures to encourage conservation. The real basic measures first. We have reserves right now for some time, but we are trying to make sure that we don't have to go to them. So it's a systematic effort to begin an education plan around water conservation to get people prepared for what may be more direct and severe. And we're trying to ensure that the rest of the state knows that we appreciate that ag and Northern California are in severe drought. The severe drought has yet to impact us heavily, but it will very shortly if it continues, which is projected to. The way that I think we address it as a legislature is to repurpose the water bond that will be on the November ballot. We need to rewrite it and ensure that We deal with a safe cleanup, making sure that our delivery systems are effective and reliable, and that conservation and smart uses of water are the chief priority.
And we will be talking about the upcoming bond measures later in the program, but I first want to go back to you being a freshman legislator. Do you think that you would have won the district had it not had your father not had your father not have the influence he has as a county board of supervisor, meaning not in term influence, meaning that he has the public reputation?
Well, yeah, I think that it was in no small part because of my father and my mother's legacies of service. My mother is a mediator and has a rather significant grassroots consumer advocacy background, and that is significantly beneficial to me in my upbringing and my work in public service early, and working with my father on a number of issues from civil rights to domestic violence prevention and coalition politics. So I'm a product of a strong public service tradition, and it helped certainly. I think what really was able to make my candidacy very appealing were my age, my competence, my experience in Sacramento, my ability to reach across the district and bring the message of a next generation of leadership, thoughtful, considerate public service, and top quality constituent service, which I was already known for because I worked in a Senate office that was twice the size of the district.
Yeah.
So folks that had to deal with me, it wasn't a new thing. It was it was that they knew me as a young man. They knew me as a public servant. They knew me as one who could deliver on the concerns of the constituents.
Just quick yes or no answer, though, but do you think you could have won and you'd be where you are today if your parents didn't have the backgrounds that they have?
Well, all of us are products of our own background, so I certainly benefited from my family heritage, and I'm proud of it and hope to live up to its highest expectations and qualities.
Okay, and now moving forward, what do you want the Assembly to do this year, or this session, I should say?
Well, I would hope to be a part of those who get the fourth balanced on-time budget in the last 4 years, which is rather unprecedented. And I'm going to sound like a broken wheel, but it's rather important to mention that the people are the ones that make the decisions that allow us to be in this position. Previously, when the minority party, the Republicans, were able to hold up the budget for months on end, and we had Governor Schwarzenegger who wouldn't dial in and focus on the process. The budget was a hostage to a political negotiation. Now it's on a majority vote. We have a governor who is clear about his priorities and focused on really eroding and removing the borrow and spend policies of the last 10 to 15 years that have been quite detrimental to the state. So sound fiscal management, strategic investments through early childhood, child care, transitional kindergarten, portions of universal preschool, infrastructure. We have one-time revenues that we are not likely to begin expanding entitlements with, but may have an opportunity for repaying debt and doing one-time infrastructure projects, and then beginning to build a reserve and a rainy day fund so that the state can be on a sound fiscal path and manage its budget well and prepare for the hard times when they come back in the next 2 or 3 years. Not as severe as it was previously, but certainly, you know, the cycle of the economy is every 3 years or so. You'll have a recession of note that will require adjustments in spending.
How do you see as an individual legislator? How do you see yourself playing a part in getting all these achieved?
Well, there are a number of ways. One, as a member of the Democratic Caucus, and one who is supportive of passing budgets on time, you have entree into making a contribution. Two, many of my colleagues are in the same place already. We released a budget blueprint. Well, the speaker and the chair of the budget committee, Nancy Skinner from Berkeley, already outlined that, and we've been messaging around it. That's what many of us were elected on, and we plan to follow through on for our constituents. Two is that on the Appropriations Committee, we're the Fiscal Committee, so we listen and hear a lot of these issues related to state programs and new programs and existing programs. Three, each member of the legislature has the opportunity to learn and study the budget. As one who worked here before, I actually read the budget. I'm reading it now as a legislator, so I know how it's structured, how it is compiled, and I listen and hear what the governor's perspectives are on it, and just to be in conversation. And when you're from Los Angeles, there's added benefit because people are paying attention, and Los Angeles has a unique interaction with the state. Mm-hmm. We're a significant tax contributor, particularly my district, and with property and sales tax and income tax, as well as capital gains, and those are really the three or four main drivers of the general fund.
Okay.
And we deserve to have a seat at the table, and everybody knows that.
Okay, and I want to talk to you now about the budget, specifically about the budget. First of all, what are your thoughts on Governor Brown's budget? Do you like it? What would you like to see changed?
Well, I mean, it's a responsible outline, and it's his responsibility to propose a balanced proposal, and it is credible. I think that everyone knows that it is credible. There are areas where the legislature must dispose for the next actually 3 to 4 months until the May revision, which will get a good capture or a better snapshot of where revenue collections are for the year. And then we'll make informed decisions based on how tax collections are coming. But it's a credible plan. There are going to have to be some conversations about what we do with additional infrastructure and strategic mm-hmm. spending, how we further implement the Affordable Care Act, which is a huge part of special and general funds. So some of it's not quite in the budget, but it's being made in some of our mm-hmm. state departments that deal directly with the health exchange and the health institutions, as well as regulated professionals. So those are really special funds. Those don't go through the general fund as much. So the governor doesn't do it it's done in a separate process. It's like a supplemental okay. appropriations process, if you will.
I'd like to interrupt you just because it's a very long answer, and I want to be able to ask more specific questions about the assembly's blueprint, if you don't mind.
I want to
ask. Speaker Perez said, quote, "Assembly Democrats want to maintain stability and expand opportunity," end quote. Do you believe the governor's budget does that?
Yes, it certainly honors stability, and through its infrastructure outlays and restoring some of our funding in education, it will expand opportunity, certainly. The argument is about how we accentuate that. It pays down. I don't know if you're familiar with the concept of deferrals to Proposition 98. Do you know what that means?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to pay down half of the deferrals from the last 10 years. So that's $6 billion, and that's going straight to K-12, K-14, rather, institutions. And that will certainly expand opportunities. We can work to reduce class size, add instructional time, supplement tutoring and after-school services, make sure that teachers are rehired and that we don't have the layoffs in the education workforce that we saw. We have teachers' aides, school nurses, and meal programs to support those in need, as well as the implementation of the local control funding formula, which will help disadvantaged students and communities even more. So, yes, the governor's proposal honors what Assembly Democrats have expressed and interesting with stability and opportunity.
Okay, and I want to go back to what you were talking about earlier, which is the universal preschool. That's something Governor Brown did not include. Are you going to try to put a motion forth on the floor to get that included in the assembly budget?
Yeah, it begins in the budget process. We don't make it wouldn't come from the floor. It would be in the budget process over the next several weeks, and I and many others will be fighting for. There are a number of terms, and they're interchangeable: transitional kindergarten, universal preschool, and early childhood education is really the banner of it. Will be a priority of this caucus, and I am very, very focused on seeing if we can get something done this year with respect to it. It will require dialogue with the governor. We will have to look at curriculum. We'll have to look at professional development. We will have to look at public-private partnerships and making sure that we don't displace the child care agencies, many of whom in my district are owned, they're women-owned businesses, women-owned small businesses. So that will be a huge, huge priority, and I'm prepared to carry legislation toward that effect or go through the budget process, which is the equivalent of submitting a letter to the budget committee asking for the creation of a line for XYZ program.
Okay, that's good to know. And one of the governor's main arguments for not including it is because it's a slippery slope once you say it starts at a certain age. What age would you want it to start?
Four is what the general concept, but it's going to be a phase in. Full implementation would be full implementation in a public system with no private actors in that would be $1 billion. So I don't think that we're going in quite in that direction. Most of us, at least I'm not. I want to see a pilot or a hybrid, public-private, and it's starting off to measure it across the state and how families respond to it. I know it'll be wildly popular, but how families respond to it, tighten it up with respect to wages and making sure that all that are performing those services are certainly at or above minimum wage and are getting continuing education and hitting metrics with respect to what we expect from the curriculum. Because early childhood is kind of child care and, you know, they don't want it to be babysitting.
Yeah,
that's a part of the governor's concern as well.
Do you have
but
a plan about how you're going
it's
to
a strategic investment and it helps on the back end if we invest early?
Do you have a plan on how you're going to get to the point of having a public-private partnership, or is that not even in the thought process yet?
Oh no, it will be in the thought process, and I've raised it in the Democratic caucus. I am prepared to introduce legislation toward that effect, and we'll be doing a number of visioning and community. Conversations in my district and across greater Los Angeles to make sure that we have a breadth of information to share with our colleagues and the fiscal people up in Sacramento.
Okay. And you are a member, moving on now, you are a member of the Appropriations Committee, and one appropriation in the budget is that for the bullet train. Do you agree with the governor putting money towards this bullet train project?
Yeah, I've been supportive of high-speed rail previously. I remain interested in bringing the system toward fruition. I'm paying attention to what the expectations are with respect to breaking ground in the Central Valley and building outward. So I support the governor toward that end. I do want to see continued participation with small businesses and provisions that ensure that various communities get an opportunity to work on what will be the largest infrastructure project the state has seen in many years. The appropriations, as you mentioned, and budget processes will allow us to talk about various ways that the state can benefit from, but another reason to support it is because we talk about infrastructure. This would really drive us toward having a first-class transit system, and that's what we deserve. It's why we have all those transit projects in my district with the Purple Line, the Crenshaw Line, Expo Phase 2 and the like, and it's the vision of Tom Bradley and pioneers past and present who wanted to see Greater Los Angeles and California really embrace the concept of mass transit at a high scale.
Okay, so just to reiterate, you are in favor of the bullet project, the bullet train project as it currently stands.
I'm in favor. Well, there's a revised business plan, and we're still going through some of it. But I am a supporter of the high speed rail and getting it done, and our regional rail projects, which are equally important.
Okay, and I have one more question for you about the bond, and that is there is a bond on the project about the Veterans Housing and Homeless Prevention Bond Act of 2014, which will be on the June.
Yeah, I think I saw that question that you had. This is a repurpose of a bond that was passed in 2008, but because the voters already passed the $900 million bond, it has to be any change you make to it has to go back to the voters. Mm-hmm. This is to it hasn't been taken to market yet. So this is to take 600 and to put it in the all the housing programs and homelessness programs that will most target and affect veterans, which are huge to my district, as your question acknowledges, at the Westwood VA. And then 300 to the Department of Veterans Affairs, it's CalVet, the California Department of Veterans Affairs, to do various types of programming in the and homeowner. So it's really, it's not new.
Okay.
It's simply a change in existing law. If the legislature had done it on its own, like a revenue, this is a general obligation bond, so it has to go to the voters. Mm-hmm. If it had been a revenue bond and the legislature had done it, we just would have had a vote of the legislature to repurpose the money.
So it's not necessarily a $600 million reduction. It's just putting that $600 million somewhere else.
But it's all for veterans still.
Yeah.
But it's a change in the ability to use it, and the restriction is because it was a general obligation bond, and the voters already voted on it. So it's repurposing for veterans still what the voters have already approved in 2008.
So you would ask your constituents to support it.
I will be, yes.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time, Assemblyman Ridley Thomas. Thank you very much for taking the time to call into the hot seat. This Wednesday morning, and we'd love to have you on again to talk about more appropriations as well as your role as the Public Safety Committee and as we get closer to the final budgeting period.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity and look forward to working with you now, henceforth, and in the future. Fight on, Max.
Fight on. Thank you very much, Assemblyman Ridley Thomas. The Hot Seat After Hours starts right now. You can email the Hot Seat inbox at thehotseatwithmaxschwartz@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at MaxSchwartzTV. You can also read and follow my blog at maxschwartztv.blogspot.com. You can subscribe to the Hot Seat's newsletter by clicking the link on our page. Go to annenbergradio.org/podcast and click on the link underneath the Hot Seat's description and enter your email address. Thank you for listening. I hope you will join me next time with directors and senior economist of the Center for Continuing Study of the California Economy, Stephen Levy.